So everyone submitted their assignments. I've received seven or group or assignments from seven groups. Any problems? Any questions? Some people asked, how am I going to mark it? Am I going to go around and do the manual tests myself and see if you get correct results? No. The coverage tests, basically, if you do it, you'll probably get full marks. Do it and present it well. Then the coverage tests, it's either pass or fail. You either do it and pass, or you don't do it and fail that part of it. I'm not going to test to see whether your results. It's just the reporting and discussion of the performance results where different groups may differentiate each other. That is, they may get different results. That's the main difference. The idea of the assignment was to get you to just to use the software to get some practical experience of understanding that networks are not easy. That is, what we discuss in theory, there are many different factors that impact upon that when it comes to practice. So when you need to deploy and design a wireless network, you need to consider many different practical impacts as well. And maybe that will give you some exposure for the future. Did anyone measure or record about the security offered by the wireless LAN? When they did their coverage tests, did you get a record of the level of security offered by the access points? Who did that? Like someone, you record the signal strength, but sometimes the software also reports whether there's encryption or not. Who's going to get bonus marks and did that? Or who's going to get full marks and did that? Anyone? No? You may have seen, if you monitor the wireless LAN, sometimes it reports about what level of encryption's used. And in the past, at least, that in SIT, there's no encryption used. So be wary when you're sending data across or communicating across SIT's wireless LAN that there's not necessarily any encryption used for anything that you send. So if you sending emails and so on, people can potentially capture your traffic and see what you're sending. There were maybe three or four slides on wireless LANs that we did not mention, but that was just summarizing about technologies about wireless LANs or issues with wireless LANs that we should consider in the future, but we're not going to consider in this course. That there are many other things related to wireless LANs. We're going to move on to the next topic, mobile networking. The concept that we're going to talk about, mobile networking, or allowing users to be mobile through the internet, just allowing people to move with their laptop across SIT's network, but to be able to move seamlessly to other networks, from SIT's network to a network offered by an internet service provider, without disruptions to the user. The first few slides just give some motivation, but I don't think we need to go through that in detail because I think you understand today and in the future there are many different wireless technologies, or wired and wireless technologies, and they connect us everywhere. That's the idea, that whether it's in our home, in our car, at work, as we're moving through a city, we have different options for connecting to the internet via our mobile phones, via our laptops, via devices on board cars, on buses, and many different options for connecting. What we would like as users is to be able to connect to the internet via the best network, via the best technology at that point in time, and allow many different devices to connect, not just connecting my laptop, but allowing my camera to transfer photos via a wireless link up and to upload onto a website automatically. So personal devices, local area wireless networks, and metropolitan and even global area wireless networks. We'd like to integrate them all into one so that as I move, wherever I go, I have internet access. And we like to do that with using the Internet Protocol, IP. That is, we'll make use of IP to communicate, whether it's making a voice call, use voice over IP to communicate, whether it's watching TV, to watch TV using the Internet Protocol as opposed to having to pay for a cable, separate cable subscriber, subscription, or paying for or using free-to-air TV. So let's assume either today or somewhere in the future that there are the many wireless networks and all communications use the Internet Protocol. Voice, video calls, radio, TV, video on demand, and so on. We can do a lot of that today, except in the future more and more will rely on the Internet Protocol. Let's assume we'd like to access the internet or content from any medium that's available to us. There are different scenarios where we'd like to do this. Let's say I'm in my car and I'd like to make a voice call, then we would use my internet connection from my car to make a voice call. That's an example. So somehow our cars need to be equipped with devices for internet access. The details here just give some different examples. You can read through this in your own time, but I think most people can recognize that if we have many different electronic devices, there's some benefits in connecting them together via internet access. Even things like appliances, connecting washing machines to the internet. Well, why? Well, so a washing machine can report its current status to the manufacturer. If there's a breakdown in parts, it can report what's gone wrong, for example. Our personal devices, if we can connect them together, then we can share information amongst them easily. Our entertainment devices, some TVs now you can buy which have internet access. That is, you plug in an Ethernet cable and you can browse the web and you can watch internet-enabled videos via the normal TV. Control things around your house or in an office environment to allow automatic control of air conditioning, lighting via remote locations via the internet. Access from vehicles, whether it's your private vehicle or a bus or a train or a plane, we'd like to have access to the internet. So there are different scenarios which motivate this. What do we need to make this work? So what are the technologies that will enable these scenarios? Well, we need some good wired networks. We need some good wireless networks, that is, we need them fast enough to be able to support these different services. If I want to watch high-definition TV over a wireless link, then I need 10, maybe 15 megabits per second data rate or throughput from your measurements. What was the best throughput that you received per client? What was the best throughput? What was the number in your assignment? What was the best throughput that you achieved from your measurements? How many megabits per second? About. 21? Anyone get better? They got 21 megabits per second. Who wants higher marks? I saw you had some at 25, 37 they got. So you will see they vary. Okay, so for one user in the wireless LAN, you are getting the best at around 20 to 30 megabits per second. When you had two users, what did you get? When you had two laptops transferring at the same time, how did you go? Okay. What some example numbers that you got? One client got 11, the other one 20. So some people would have saw that if you have two people transmitting at the same time, they both don't get 20 or 30 megabits per second. They have to share. Ideally, they'd share evenly, but in practice, you may see that one gets more than another. If you had, in a city, 100 users, they're not going to get much. That is, we have to share that 30 megabits per second amongst those 100 users in that vicinity. So we need some new, faster wireless technologies. What you did your experiments with were using mainly 802.11g, providing data rates up to 54 megabits per second. Newer technologies are available for faster speeds. And things like WiMAX are available for larger distances as well. So these technologies are becoming available, provide us faster speeds for mobile internet access. What this topic focuses on is not those technologies, not the individual wireless technologies, but what we call internet mobility. Allowing our host, like my laptop, to change between different subnets, to change from the SIT network to the Toshiba network, which is next door or back there, and change seamlessly, which means that if I drive in a car from SIT to Toshiba and I would like to be able to be accessing the internet, making a voice call, a video call, watching a streaming video, such that there's no disruption of that service. But as I change between SIT's network and Toshiba's network, then I don't notice that. That's what we'd like, seamless changing networks. And we refer to that as internet mobility because we're changing between IP subnets. We're going to talk about how to enable internet mobility. Towards the end of this topic, we may cover some other techniques that we'll talk about then. Infrastructureless networks. But let's get straight into the first and the main topic in this, internet mobility or IP mobility or host mobility. That is, we care about a host in the internet moving between IP subnets and how to enable that. Later we'll talk about a special case. What happens if an entire network moves? When does a network move? Maybe your network is inside your car. So host mobility is about my laptop moving. Network mobility is about a set of devices moving together at one time, like a vehicle moving. We'll look at that maybe in the next, maybe next week, and maybe a variation, ad hoc networks. Host mobility. And the protocol that enables host mobility is referred to as mobile IP, mobile internet protocol. So we'll describe how that works. To make things easier and understanding the problem and the solution, we'll make some assumptions about the network topology, the details of the individual networks. So this is a simple diagram to illustrate a portion of a network where we may have an access point, say an access point on the wall or on the ceiling, some devices, some hosts, and they will connect wirelessly to that access point, and we may have another access point nearby. So we could see this as, okay, the access point in this corridor and the access point down the other end of the corridor or downstairs. And those access points are connected to a switch and to a router eventually, and that router connects out to the rest of the internet. What we're going to assume is that independent of the number of access points and also the number of switches here, we'll treat all of this as one IP subnet. That is, from the internet protocol's perspective, this is just one IP subnet. That is, all of the hosts have an IP address which are on the same network or have the same network portion. Wireless LAN, if we assume wireless LAN as the example here to communicate to the access point, wireless LAN enables us to move between access point to access point on the same subnet. That is, if you take your laptop, you're currently associated with this first access point. If I walk around the building, wireless LAN will deal with the handovers between access points. It will automatically connect to my second access point. Let's move some people around here. How are you going with this course? Easy? No, not easy. Then come and sit up the front and it'll be easier because then you can understand and you can join him. Just sit up the front for this morning and follow the lecture and it will be easier. Come on, just this row, or if you're happy, just sit here. There's no rush. We've got all day. We don't need to go to lunch. You can bring your laptop. Yeah, here, there, that's okay. We need to understand the assumptions so that we can understand the problem and the eventual solution. If you start to get confused in this part, then the rest of this topic is going to be hard. So, within the one IP subnet, and let's say the entire SIT wireless LAN, all the access points, is just one IP subnet. When you access the wireless LAN in SIT, you get an IP address. Does anyone notice what IP address you get when you access the internet? I think they're in the range 1010, I can check because I'm connected to the wireless LAN. If we look at our IP address, .10.10.3. You may not be able to see this. The IP address of my wireless LAN, because I'm connected to the SIT wireless LAN, is 10.10.3.101. If you connect your laptop somewhere to an access point downstairs or in the other building, it'll be 10.10.3 something. The something is automatically assigned by the DHCP server for SIT. So every laptop connected to the WSIT wireless LAN gets an IP address within one IP subnet, which we'd refer to that IP subnet. If we remember back to IP addressing, we take the network portion, such as 10.10.3, and the host portion is set to all zeros. So we can say the IP subnet for the SIT wireless LAN is 10.10.3.0. Every laptop that connects, it doesn't matter which access point, will get something in the range 10.10.3.1 up to 10.10.3.254. In this topic, we're not dealing with the mobility between access points because wireless LAN handles that okay. That is, we'll assume that if we want to change from this access point to this access point, then that's possible. And it is because wireless LAN supports these handovers of discovering access points and associating with them. And importantly, if we want to change from this access point to this access point, my laptop does not change IP address. If here's my laptop, which is 10.10.3.101, doesn't matter which access point inside here that I associate with, I still use this same IP address because it's still within the subnet 10.10.3.0. So we'll assume that mobility within an IP subnet is possible, but of not of interest to us in this topic. What we care about is if there's another subnet nearby. Maybe this is SIT's wireless LAN. And some company has... Oh, there's an internet service provider that offers service which also covers this area, whether it's via wireless LAN or via 3G or some other wireless technology. What we care about is what happens when the laptop wants to change from this subnet to this subnet. That is mobility between IP subnets. Well, if the laptop moves to this subnet, it needs an IP address within this network range. Something like 72.16.3. So that's the level of mobility that we're going to talk about. Mobility within subnets is usually handled by the layer 2 technology, like wireless LAN. But mobility between different subnets or access networks is harder. There are different technologies, different owners of those networks. This may be owned by one company. This is owned and operated by SIT. They have different technologies and different choices. And what we'll see is that we need to change the IP address, and that causes problems. In the examples that I use, to save space and time, I'll often not write the full IP address. So we know that this is the network address. This is a host address. We can say this is the network portion and this is the host portion. So to be brief, what I'll often do is simply replace this with some letter, like x.a, meaning X is some value of the network portion, A is some value for the host portion. Actually, that's wrong. I'll explain why. Let's call this one X.A. That is, this host has IP address X.A, where X can be any value in the internet, and A is the value that which represents the host on network X. And we refer to this IP subnet as network X. X.A is on network X. X.B, which could be really 10.10.3.102, is also on network X. So just so that we don't have to write IP addresses all the time, often I'll refer to just the letters to represent the network portion and the host portion. So on this example, this is one IP subnet, subnet X. There are four hosts, X, A, B, C, D, and a router, X.Z. Just some terminology. So I call this an IP subnet or an access network. If we go back to our first lecture, we referred to access networks. And access networks in the internet are connected together via backbone network or a core network. Hosts and routers all use the same network portion of an IP address. This is basic knowledge of the IP address structuring. So in this access network or IP subnet X, we have one router and four hosts. And instead of drawing and identifying the wireless LAN technology in here, we will hide that detail because this is going to be independent of what specific technology is in the access network. So a simple internet, here we have an example of three access networks connected together via some core network. This may be SIT's wireless LAN, some other companies' wireless network and a third company's, all connected together maybe via some wired network across some large area. We're going to look at what happens if the mobile device, a host, moves between access networks. How does that work? So, if we want to move our host from here to here, from access network X to access network Y, then we know the way the IP addresses are structured that we would need to change the IP address of that host. It's originally X.B. If I move into this subnet, it should be something Y dot, or should be Y dot something. Why do we do that? Well, the reason for having this structuring of network address, host address, is to support routing. Routing in the internet works based on networks rather than individual hosts. If we consider that network and look at router Z.Z, that is this router here, it would have a routing table. And a simple routing table, if we say the destination and then the next router to send to. That's a simple way to view the routing table. For this router, the destination in internet routing is not individual hosts, but is entire subnets. That is, we'd say destination is network X, then the next router is X.Z. If the destination is network Y, then the next router is Y dot Z. That would be the routing table for router Z, or the router for network Z. That is, in the destination, we typically identify an entire destination network, not individual hosts. If we were to use a routing table that has individual hosts, it would look more like this. Destination, next. To reach X.A, send to X.Z. To reach X.B, also X.Z. That is, we'd need to have an individual entry for each host in this subnet. That's not very convenient. Y.E, Y.Z. Y.F, Y.Z. If we had 1,000 hosts in this network, we'd need 1,000 different entries here. And if we look at routers for the cover large portions of the internet, where we have millions, billions of hosts, it's just not manageable to maintain routing tables like this. So we do it like this. We route based on networks, not based on the destination individual hosts. So if our computer, the source computer is, for example, Z.A here, and it wants to send a packet, so the source is Z.A, and it wants to communicate with our laptop, which originally is X.B. So before any movement happens, X.B is here. This one wants to send packets to X.B. It's maybe streaming video from this server to X.B. So the person at X is watching some streaming video. Packets are coming in. And what are happening, the packets are sent from our original source computer to the local router. Destination X.B. Router looks in the routing table. This is not our routing table. This is our routing table. It says, okay, destination is X.B, the destination of this one IP packet with an IP header and some data. The IP header contains the destination address, X.B. The router looks in the routing table and sees, okay, the destination, I don't care that it's X.B, I know that it's network X. Therefore, from my routing table, this IP datagram needs to be sent to X.Z as the next router, because the destination we know is on network X. Sends it to our router X.Z, as this one. That router receives it. That router knows the destination is x.b. The router knows that this is network x, though therefore it knows that it can send directly to x.b here. And that's how normal internet routing works. Okay, what happens when we move now? So if I originally had the IP address x.b, and if I want to move here, well, two options I have. Change my IP address or keep the original IP address. Let's see what happens. If I keep the original IP address, that is, I move my laptop to here and I've still got the IP address x.b, we have a problem because routing will not work. Because z.a does not know that I've changed my IP address. This is some server in the internet. It doesn't know that my laptop has changed IP subnets. Unless it knows, then there's no way for it to know that it has moved to a different location. So, from this sender's perspective, it just knows that the destination is x.b. I was sending some video packets to x.b. I keep sending them because I'm streaming video. They go to this router. The router knows to reach network X, send to x.z. The packets arrive at x.z. They arrive here, but our laptop is not here. It's here. So we have a problem now because the packets which are destined to this laptop is no longer in this network. It's in another network. So if we do not change the IP address, we cannot send our packets continuously from the source to the destination. That's a problem. So the alternative is to change the IP address. Because internet routing relies on correct IP addresses, that means if you're in network Y, you need an IP address that starts Y dot something. If you're in network X, it needs to be X dot something. So, one logical approach, if you move, change IP addresses. I've moved, I was X.B, and I moved to a new network, and I'm now Y.G, for example. If we do that, what happens? Somehow we need to inform the source that I've changed IP address. The source knows me as x.b. If I change my IP address, if I do not tell the source, then I will not receive any packets. Because if I change my IP address to y.g, this will still think to send to x.b, they will get here, there is no x.b because it's moved. So if we change our IP address and do not tell the source, we will not receive the packets. So, if we change our IP address, if we tell the source, then the source will start sending to the correct destination. The problem is, this time it takes to tell the source can be too long. And it may mean this change of IP address means that the application must stop and then restart. Imagine you're downloading a file. This is the server. This is your laptop. You're downloading a file, a large file. So it's going to take several minutes. You're downloading your address is x.b. If you move and change your IP address to y.g, then for most applications, that download would have to stop. And when you get the new address, y.g, that download would have to start again. That can be a serious disruption for some applications. That's not seamless mobility. That means there could be a disruption of several seconds, maybe tens of seconds. If I'm making a voice call, or I'm streaming video, high-quality video, if there's a disruption of 2 seconds, then the users are generally not happy. That's not good enough. What we need is that if this mobile device moves to here, the disruption is the order of milliseconds, tens, hundreds of milliseconds. So we need some quick way to change our IP address, but not disrupt the application. So that's trying to motivate this problem. Why does a problem arise? Why is it hard to handle mobility in the internet? Well, because routing relies upon destinations being network addresses. That's the way internet routing works, and we cannot change that. So if we move our device, routing will not move. Routing will not work. If we change our IP address, the applications will be disrupted. So we need some trade-off to be chosen. This is just making some notes on what happens if we change an IP address. Well, the main point is, if I change an IP address, my application may be stopped and then have to start again. A download is stopped and then starts again. That's a serious disruption for some applications. That's referred to as being nomadic, if you can stop and start your application. True mobility, this is important, the mobility should be seamless. That is, from the user's perspective, your and I perspective, it's as if nothing happens. As I move, I don't notice any difference in the application. So perhaps small delays of tens to hundreds of milliseconds are allowable, not much more. This is very important, especially for multimedia like streaming applications or voice calls over the internet. So, what do we do? The solution to this problem, change the IP address, but hide that from the applications. So our problem was that if we do not change the IP address, routing does not work. If we do change the IP address, the applications will have to stop and start again. The solution, change the IP address, so routing does work, but hide that change from the application so that the application is not disrupted. And this solution is implemented in something called Mobile IP, which is a standard by the Internet Engineering Task Force. And we're going to describe how that works. It's an old standard. It's been around for a long time. There's been a lot of work to make it effective. It's referred to as a mobile IP. It works for IP version 4, which is the current version of IP that we use on a regular basis. But IPv6 is available, and there's a version of mobile IP for IPv6. The concepts are about the same. There's not much different in the concept. Some of the terminology differs. We're focusing on mobile IP version 4. So let's explain how it works and introduce some of the terminology. So the example is our laptop, the original location. I have an address, x.b. Where did I get that address from? When you turn on your laptop and you connect to the wireless LAN, what's your IP address? IP address. Exam coming up for your networking lab where you need to know how to check your IP address. .10.10.3.52 That's his IP address. Where did you get it from, most importantly? Did you type it in? Where did you get it from? Where did your computer get it from? A DHCP server, which is in fact on the router. Okay. In most networks, DHCP is configured to automatically give IP addresses. So let's say your laptop got the address x.b here. And we have a computer we want to communicate with, z.a. And his laptop, x.b, is, let's say, exchanging packets with z.a. Maybe it's a video conversation, which is going to run for several minutes. So they're sending packets in both directions. Z.a knows your computer as x.b. That is, it knows its IP address. We will say that computers have a home or a home network. That is the network where they originally get their IP address. My SIT work laptop, the home network, because it is owned and operated by SIT, would be SIT's home or SIT's network. So let's say the home network of his laptop is network X, and therefore it got an address x.b, to simplify. And it's going to move to another network, network Y, and eventually to network Z. So some terminology, this would be the laptop's home network. These networks would be foreign networks. So mobility, you're originally in your home network, and you move to foreign networks. Of course, laptop Y.E, its home network is here. These two are foreign networks relative to this one. The idea is that I've got a home IP address of x.b. As I move to a foreign network, I still have my home IP address, the original one, but I get an additional address, which is specific to the foreign network I'm in, called a care of address. Same concept as if you've got your home address where you live, and you temporarily move to another home, live somewhere else, you can tell the post office you can subscribe a care of address such that mail that comes to your original home address is forwarded to your care of address. And that's the concept we use here. We have our home IP address still, x.b, for our laptop, and we'll have a care of address, which is an address which would be assigned by this router or a DHCP server on this router. As I enter this network, it would assign me a care of address, y.m, for example. Y, because it's Y address Y, because it's on network Y. .m would just be a host address, which is unused. And so that's the concept of getting a care of address. As you move into a foreign network, you get a care of address. You still have your home address. Our original source, z.a, is sending packets to x.b, sending packets being routed to here. Then our laptop has moved to our new foreign network. What we want is that the packets sent from z.a reach us here at y.m. For that to work, what we do is the laptop, when it moves into a new foreign network, it tells its original router that it has moved. More specifically, it tells the original router its care of address. And this is the same concept as you move, you can have your mail forwarded to a new care of address. So, as this laptop moved into this foreign network Y, it is assigned a care of address, Y.m, and the laptop somehow tells this router, and some new terminology, this router is referred to as the home agent. It's the home agent for this laptop. It tells it what the care of address is. So that Z.A, that doesn't know that you've moved, it has no idea that you moved, and we should hide that detail from that host, keep sending packets to X.B. So they're sent across the internet, they arrive at router x.z, because that's what our routing table tells them to forward to. The packets are sent here across the internet, arrive at x.z, because they're destined for x.b, X.Z, which is the home agent, realizes, computer X.B is no longer home. It has just moved to a foreign network. And its care of address is Y.M. Therefore, I will forward those packets towards Y.M, which would reach this router Y. This router Y would then forward them to Y.M. So that's the basic concepts of mobile IP. We get a care of address, or we have a home IP address. If we move into foreign networks, networks which are not our home, we get a care of address. We tell our home agent what our care of address is. That is, we inform our home agent that we've moved and where we have moved to, such that this computer, which does not know that we've moved, keeps sending always to X.B. But if we have moved, this router will receive those packets and then forward them to the care of address. So that's the basic concept of mobile IP. We just need to go into some details of, or see some details of how some of the mechanisms work. Easy so far? Any questions? Ooh, yep. Sorry? Who keeps the home IP address? Let's say you turn on your laptop here in SIT. You turned on your laptop and you got the address 1010.3.52. Let's say that's your home address. It's known by the router, or the home agent. It knows that this is your home network. As you move in your laptop, you're walking around, or you put it in your car and you drive to Toshiba back there, and you enter their network, which is a foreign network. It's got a different subnet range, a different network portion, network Y. You've still got your home address, 1010.3.52, or X.B. That is, your laptop still has that address, except it gets a second IP address, this special care of address. So, in fact, associated with your laptop now, there are two IP addresses. This computer is still sending to 1010.3.52, or X.B. It doesn't know you've moved. It still thinks you're in SIT. The packets are going here. The home agent knows that you have actually moved and starts forwarding in this direction. So the laptop has its home IP address always. If it returns to its home network, it will still use that same home IP address. Mm-hmm. So the point there is, okay, we need to have some wireless connectivity all the way. But, so let's say you walk outside the corridor. There's an access point you're associated with. You walk out the corridor and you then associate with a new access point downstairs because you're moving, and then another one down on the ground floor. This change between access points is internal to this network. We'll assume that that works. That is, that's the role of wireless LAN to enable you to change between access points. But you're still using the same IP address inside SIT. As soon as you move outside of SIT's IP network, you need this mechanism to get a care of address. So, although this picture draws the networks physically apart from each other, there would need to be some overlap. That is, imagine we're in SIT's wireless LAN, and then we also have coverage from our neighbour Sony's wireless LAN. That is, you're just walking across the road. You have coverage from both. Your laptop realises you're entering a foreign network. It initiates this process of get a care of address, tell your home agent of that care of address, such that packets which were coming to your original SIT address now get forwarded to your new care of address in Sony's network. That's the concept. Any other questions? We'll see more details. This, one of our first slides, we assume that, let's say there's wireless coverage everywhere, not just wireless LAN. This could be a network from a 3G network or GPRS or a WiMAX network. We assume we have coverage from different wireless technologies everywhere, which is quite common in cities nowadays. So, again, some terminology. We have nodes or hosts. We say we have mobile nodes, mobile hosts. These are the laptops which move. They use or implement software called mobile IP. They implement this protocol. That is, they need some special software to do this for them. There's the correspondent node. This is the node that we were originally communicating with, Z.A in our example. We call that the correspondent node. The node, our mobile node, is corresponding or communicating with. That can be a normal computer on the internet. It doesn't need to use mobile IP. It could be just a web server somewhere. We have our home network. Every node has a single, just one home network. That's the network where it's assigned its normal or original IP address. Let's say my work laptop has the home of SIIT. From that node's point of view, all other networks are foreign networks. I have one home network. Every other network in the world is foreign. We have a home agent, a special device on a network, normally a router, that keeps track of where the mobile nodes are. The home agent for SIIT's network knows where all the SIIT mobile nodes are, whether they're home or which foreign network they are in. That's the concept. And the home agent is really just a server, a piece of software running on a router. It maintains a table keeping track of the mobile nodes called a mobility binding table. For its own mobile nodes, it records their current care of address. So my mobile node, if it's moved to Toshiba's network, my home agent in its mobility binding table would have a record there saying 10.10.3.101 has the care of address 72.16.3.5. They were just recorded in memory at the home agent, normally implemented as a router. And we also have foreign agents. Again, routers on foreign networks that have some special operation. They keep track of the nodes, the mobile nodes, which are visiting its network. And they provide the care of addresses, and they forward data to those nodes visiting. And they maintain a visitors list. So the Toshiba network, when my SIIT laptop has moved there, would have a visitor list, and my laptop's address would be in that visitor's list, recording the home IP and the home agent address. And both the home agent and foreign agent are just software running on routers. And that's what we see in this example. That is, from this laptop's perspective, it has one home agent, and these two routers are foreign agents. From this laptop's perspective, Y.F, this would be the home agent, and these two would be foreign agents. So it's all from one node's perspective as to which one's home and which one's foreign. We have our home IP address, and we have a care of address. Just IP addresses. So the same structure as we know with IP addresses, it's just that we can now have a second address associated with our mobile node. So this just shows how the forwarding works. That is, once our laptop has moved into this foreign network, it gets assigned a care of address, Y.M. Z.A, sending packets to X.B. But X.B is actually moved into a foreign network. Z.A does not know that. It's sending packets to X.B. They go to this router to reach network X sends them to this router. Then this router, which is a home agent, realizes, X.B is no longer home. X.B is now, or now has the care of address Y.M. Therefore forwards those packets to this router and then eventually to the visiting node. This router, which is a foreign agent, knows that X.B is visiting its network and has the care of address Y.M. In the reverse direction, this laptop is sending packets back to the server, to Z.A. The reverse direction, we can bypass the home agent. That is, we send to this router. The router sends directly to the destination router Z here, and then to the correspondent node. This is our correspondent node here. So note, with mobile IP, we have this triangle problem, or triangular routing problem. To reach our node here, we actually have to send via the home agent. That's a problem, because it introduces extra delay. But a problem we cannot avoid if we want to use this mechanism. But on the reverse direction, we can send direct. That is, we don't need to send via the home agent. The problem arises in practice if, let's say, it's not the best example, but let's say my home agent is a router somewhere in another city or even another country. This node is, say, in Toshiba, their network. This node is my laptop visiting Sony's network nearby. The two networks are geographically close, just hundreds of meters away from each other. This path should be very short. But if we need to send via a home agent, and that home agent is in another city or in another country, even worse, then to reach Toshiba, to Sony, which is hundreds of meters away, we actually have to send to some other home agent in another city or in another country and then back to here. So this can be very long and add a large amount of delay. But that's just a performance problem we have to accept. We'll see some detailed examples of that forwarding happening. Any questions on this one before we move on? Is in one direction we need to send via the home agent. The reverse direction we do not. Everyone knows why the difference occurs. Exam question. Why can we send to the correspondent node direct? Why do we have to send from the correspondent node to the home agent? That's been the type of exam question in previous years on this, or addressing that issue. What's the answer? So the important thing to note is we're sending to the home agent here. The reason we send to the home agent or via the home agent is because of the normal internet routing. This computer thinks it's sending to X.B, sends to its local router, Z.Z here, which has a routing table which says if the destination is X.B, send that packet to router X. Or X.Z. That is, sends it, if we're sending to X.B, the packet will eventually be delivered across the internet to this router. It's only then that that router realizes, X.B has moved, and then forwards it in the correct direction. That's why we need to send via the home agent. In the reverse direction, let's consider. This computer is sending to Z.A. Here. We're sending to here. But this computer knows it's not in its home network. So it simply creates an IP packet destined to Z.A. Sends to this router. This router sees it has an IP packet, destination Z, network Z. Uses its routing table and simply sends in the direction of network Z, which is here. And then it's received directly. So we don't need to send via the home agent in the reverse direction. So there are some issues or some more detailed mechanisms that are needed for all this to work. When we move into a into a foreign network, we need to tell or register with that foreign network. If my laptop moves into Toshiba's network, there needs to be some registration process saying, I am in your network, can I access the internet? So there's some registration process called mobile IP registration, which we'll go through. Similar to, how do I know that there's an access point out there? Remember, when you turn on your laptop for wireless LAN, we need to discover that there's an access point out there before we associate with this access point. Same concept with mobile IP. When I enter a network, I need to register. Before I can register, I must discover. So there's a process called agent discovery, which allows your computer to discover that you're in a new network. We may move between foreign networks, from one foreign network to another. So we say that's a handover between foreign networks. So there needs to be some mechanisms to manage that handover. And we've said that there's sometimes there can be an extra delay if we have to send via the home agent. Mobile IP includes some optional mechanisms to make that better, to reduce that delay, called route optimization and handover smoothing. I don't think we'll look at them in any detail. They're optional mechanisms. Registration. So, in this case, let's say the laptop has entered a foreign network. It needs to find or to discover that it is in a foreign network, really to discover the foreign agent. So, to know that you're in a foreign network, you need to discover the foreign agent. So we'll see shortly there's a mechanism for doing that, agent discovery. Once you've done that, there's a mechanism for registering. And this is it. Here's our mobile node, here's a foreign agent, here's our home agent. We send a special mobile IP packet, a registration request. Send it to the foreign agent. It indicates the home IP address of the mobile node. So this mobile node tells the foreign agent, I want to register, that is, I want to access the internet via your foreign network. Here's my home IP address. That foreign agent, if it says yes, you can access. There may be some security mechanisms. Makes a note of the home IP address. Allocates a care of address. That is, chooses some address, a care of address for that mobile node, and sends, that's number three, and number four, sends a registration request to the home agent. So this is the process of, there's two things. Register with the foreign agent to say, I am visiting your network, and also inform your home agent that you are visiting a particular foreign network. That is, tell your home agent where you are. This registration request is telling the foreign agent, I want to visit your network. The foreign agent sends that registration request to the home agent saying, you have a mobile node visiting my network. Home agent keeps track of that, replies saying, yes, that mobile node is actually a mobile node of mine, so there may be some security mechanisms there. Sends back a reply. Reply comes back. At the end of that, this mobile node is registered in the network and can start using its, or can start sending packets in that network and start using its care of address. That's the concept. We'll go through a more detailed example that illustrates those addresses later. That's just the basic concept of registering. We need to discover a foreign agent. And the ways to discover a foreign agent are similar concepts to how do you discover an access point. Wireless LAN, how do you discover an access point? What are the mechanisms? Answer's not in front of you. You turn on your laptop and your wireless LAN card starts. How does it discover an access point? What happens? Broadcast what? Who broadcasts? You're right. There's something broadcast. Something is broadcast by some device. In wireless LAN, simply, what happens? I turn on my laptop. How do I know there's an access point nearby? What happens? Turn on your laptop. What's the mechanism? Who broadcasts a message? AP, access point broadcasts a message. That is, one mechanism is the access point is just sitting there. Normally every 100 milliseconds, it's broadcasting a beacon message saying, I am an access point. Everyone within range will receive that. If you receive it, you've discovered the access point. So that's easy. The access point broadcasts beacons, advertising itself. The other mechanism, or the alternative, when you start your laptop, you broadcast a request message saying, I am looking for an access point. If an access point receives that, it will respond saying, I am an access point. So two mechanisms there. A passive mechanism from the client's perspective, a passive mechanism where the access point advertises itself, and an active mechanism where the client sends out a request, solicits access points. Same concepts are used in mobile IP for discovering foreign agents. A foreign agent is some router in the network. You enter some foreign network. You need to know which device in the network is the foreign agent. So we have two basic mechanisms, advertisements and solicitation. Advertisements is that this foreign agent periodically broadcasts messages. My laptop has moved to here. There's a, in this IP subnet, there are devices around. One of those devices is this router, which is a foreign agent. What it does, periodically, let's say every 1 second, sends out to everyone on this subnet, everyone who's attached, an agent advertisement saying, I am a foreign agent. I'm advertising myself. Since my laptop is attached to this network, it should receive that agent advertisement. And then it's discovered the foreign agent. So the agent broadcasts periodic advertisements indicating its own IP address. It actually uses ICMP. You know, you use ICMP for ping, you can use it for other mechanisms as well. The rate at which the advertisement is sent is usually, or should be, limited. By default, it's usually 1 per second. The alternative is that if you do not receive an advertisement, or you want to learn a foreign agent much faster than in 1 second, then you send out what's called a router solicitation, broadcast to everyone in the network, saying, I am looking for a foreign agent. I'm soliciting a foreign agent. It broadcasts this message to the network. If the foreign agent receives the message, it can respond back saying, I am a foreign agent. Same concept as this mechanism used in wireless LANs, that is broadcasting beacons, sending probe requests. This is broadcasting agent advertisements or sending router solicitation messages. Different mechanisms, but same concepts. We will look at this third option, which after the break. We're just going through the basic concepts. We'll go through a detailed example that illustrates them after the break. And that detailed example will include the concept of tunneling. So that's a point to stop. That is, up until now, what we know is that in mobile IP, your mobile node, say your laptop, has a home IP address. When it moves into a foreign network, it must discover the foreign agent. Two ways to discover: receive router advertisements or send a router solicitation. Once you discover the foreign agent, you register. That registration process goes from your mobile node to the foreign agent to your home agent. Registration is really saying, telling the foreign agent, I want to visit your network, give me a care of address, and also telling the home agent, I am visiting a foreign network, this is where it is. Once we've registered, then the data packets can start to be forwarded in the correct direction. Tunneling will be the mechanism that we go through to how those packets are forwarded. So let's stop there. I know that's different concepts, many new concepts. What we'll do is use a more detailed example to explain these mechanisms in some more depth after the break. So let's continue in the afternoon.